Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. We're delighted that you're here to join with us and to share this space where we're going to enter into a conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness. I'm not sure what's happening with Michelle. She's handling the show today, so I assume she may be having some technical difficulties that she didn't get to chime in with us, but we'll expect that she'll show up any moment. And we're just honored that you're here to join us and to show this conversation as we look at this amazing ancient technology of forgiveness and realize that we've been duped in our culture because we've been taught that forgiveness is about how I let somebody else off the hook for what's happening inside of me, when in fact forgiveness is how I reach inside my own mind, and if I don't happen to like the content there, I get to change that part of my mind. And so we're honored that you're here to share this space with us. And I think I hear Michelle in the background. Young lady?
Hi there. You predicted it.
Hey, welcome.
Welcome. Happy Thursday, everybody. Yep, switchboard's up. There was my computer froze right as the intro was going. And actually, I was pleased with my calmness. Practicing.
There you go. Cool. Awesome. So let's see. Our date today is
July 2nd, 2015. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk with our host. We encourage you to call in. It makes the show so much more enjoyable when we hear from our listeners. So, Dr. Karen,
sure.
Karen, ready to take another cut.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm out in the boonies here in Missouri, and what day it is, I don't even know. I just lose track of that detail when I'm out here working on anything from getting pipes fixed to who knows what needs to be done in order to get ready for our intensive season, which has changed around a little this year. Instead of doing a full intensive season, because it looks like it's going to be a pretty small season, we're going to make a shift, and we're going to start out on July the...
I think 11th, right?
11th, yeah, I was going to say the 11th. We'll start with a 10-day Food Fund Forgiveness and Work Program, an economy program where we'll do work projects during the day and workshops in the evenings. And then on Saturday, we'll do Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. So we'll start out with that for the first 10 days, and then we'll move into a 16-day Laws of Living. Following Friday, we'll start with Laws of Living, and at this point, that's the only intensive we'll actually do this summer, and the rest of our time, we're kind of repurposing as we look at what needs to happen. If you look at our Facebook page, I just posted that the not the links yet, because that's not all live yet, but we're getting ready to begin to participate in a new television network, and we'll be doing Forgiveness TV and doing some programming that will be available for people to tap into the work of this first century Aramaic process that we're teaching, but we'll also be joining with several other people who'll be working on developing this better TV network and looking at some of the good news that's going on in the world, some of the technology and the tools for bringing humanity to a new level of function, a truly human level of function. When you recognize that human life is the awesome active presence of love, sadly, we see that there's not a whole lot of that left. And if you realize that human life to a great degree has been lost, then the effort becomes one of restoring human life. And our definition of a human life is very simple. If you hold a newborn child, you know exactly what a human life is. And that's what we're looking to tap into. That's what we're looking to restore to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. This absolutely awesome, active presence of love is where we are designed to live. And unfortunately, when we come into the world tends to put its thumbprints on us, and we get lost in the activity of those thumbprints. And the thumbprints are usually made of all manner of hostility, fear, grief, rage, pain, drama, and trauma. And because the technology of forgiveness has been lost, once that energy starts to move in people, the tendency is to forget who we are as love and to function out of that hostility and fear. As we restore, person by person by person, the tool of forgiveness, we find that more and more people are willing and able to tap into and recognize who they are, choose to function as love, and remove the opposite expression, remove the hostility and fear that tends to keep us locked into a world that's other than the one we're designed to live in. So that's what we're here to share with you. If you have not yet tapped into the forgiveness process, we invite you to go to our website, which is www.whyagain.org. And in the middle of the page, you'll see a bullseye. You may have to scroll down a little bit to get to that. But if you click on that bullseye, it's going to open a whole series of links. And that series of links will tell you all about how to actually engage in the first century Aramaic forgiveness process. We invite you to remember that the word forgive doesn't mean letting somebody else off the hook. The word forgive means remove. How do you remove the hostility and fear, the thumbprints that have been impressed upon us that tend to run our lives and be restored to functioning as this pure presence of love that we are designed to function as? So that's our work, that's our project, and that's what we're here to support on planet Earth. And let's say hello to Dr. Tim. Is Tim out there today?
I'm here.
Well, hey, young man, how are you? What's exciting in your world today?
Well, I tell you, the joy and the challenge of working with these tools, especially in a private practice, I ran into a situation yesterday where some people came in and sat down in my office and said, as a couple, and they said, okay, so we have already been to three different therapists, and they all told us our marriage is hopeless, we should divorce. So what can you do for us? And as we started talking about it, one of the things that was proposed from the three other therapists a couple of years ago was this 100% accountability, so that each of them would know always where the other one was, constant contact with phone calls, texting, whatever.
And so let's not have any trust at all, eh?
Well, it's zero trust, and that's, at some level, the people that promote this in therapy believe that's the only way to rebuild trust after an offense has occurred. And of course, I have never personally seen it work. I've had some people say to me that they think it's the only thing that works, but what it has done in the people I've worked with in the last 41 years is promote more of a distrust. And as Guy Finley says, so even if I get what I think I need to be happy, as soon as I get it and I feel I'm happy because I've got it, now I have to be afraid that I might lose it. And so how is it possible that the thing that causes my happiness also causes my fear? It can't be. So there's a, to my mind, an insanity in it that's based on the idea that someone or something outside of me is causing my upset. And when I talk about that with people, then I say, look, the first thing they come back with is, oh, so I was supposed to be okay that she had an affair and then never hold her accountable and then and just let her do whatever she wants. And I'm quick to point out, I never said those words or anything like it. However, if I'm in a relationship with somebody and they betray a trust, and then I think my goal has to be to change them in order for me to feel safe or respected or loved again, I've set up a prison for myself and thrown away the key. I've set an impossible task. And so that's one of the reasons I like this work, and it's been so liberating for me personally, and I've seen it be liberating for a lot of people who pick it up and use the tools, is just like they talk about with Ho'oponopono, I step into 100% responsibility for what I'm experiencing in the moment. And when I step into that and have tools to dismantle whatever's less than love, now my life can change. And automatically does, I believe. It's just a natural process, like a seed that's sprouting. When it gets the necessary ingredients, the sun, the soil, the moisture, the right conditions, it just grows. And my life improves when I simply give it the right conditions, which is an application of the tools to remove what's less than love. So those are the thoughts that are on the top of my mind today.
Interesting. It sounds like this idea of so-called 100% accountability is 0% responsibility. Now everything that it takes to make me happy is in your hands, and you have to do this in order for me to stay connected to my source, which of course is so ludicrous that recognizing that if I'm in pain, if I appear in my mind to be in pain over what you've done, then I've always got my finger pointed at you, and then your behavior is supposed to correct what's going on inside of me, which is, you know, pretty much a joke when you realize how the mind works. And so I certainly agree on that one. It just seems pretty crazy that by you telling me at every moment where you are, I'm going to be happy about that. It's like, sounds like a setup to me.
You know, I have always experienced that. And then, of course, the next thing that happens is people say, well, then what am I supposed to do? As someone who was in a relationship where I thought there was this trust and the trust has been betrayed and it's violated, now what do I do? And I say, look, here's what I recommend people do, and it's the basis of the power struggle model. Line out for the other person. First and foremost, I take responsibility for my upset and I work on dismantling it, because intense emotion is the best way to screw up any good logical or rational system. So I work on diffusing my negative emotions and restoring myself to that calm, happy place. Then I lay out what I can and will do if this person violates the trust again or betrays my trust again. And I let them make the decision about what's going to happen based on their choices. And I focus on what I'm going to do based on what I have control over. And then I don't have to worry about tracking them down to make sure they aren't sending emails or texts to somebody or engaging in a business deal with somebody. I just say, if I find out that's happened, here's what I'm going to do. And it's the things I'm going to do are things I can do, things I will do, things I can do without intense emotion, and things I can do that are focused on making my life more safe and sane and livable, regardless of what the other person chooses. And the things I can do from that calm space that fit all four of those requirements always put me in a better position. And they relieve me, they liberate me from the need to track down the other person, monitor their behavior, and try to change them in any way.
Sounds like sane steps forward. And, of course, engaging in the process of, if I have pain, turmoil, or trauma, my pain or turmoil or trauma moving inside of me sets me up for a certain quality of perception and a certain quality of energy that I radiate on you. And if the quality of energy that I radiate on you toward you is based in some form of hostility or fear, then if every moment that you're around me, I'm spraying this hostility or fear on you, chances are that you're not going to be a very happy camper. And neither am I, because before I can spray that hostility or fear on you, I have to spray it all over every cell in my own structure. And I just set myself up for more trauma, more drama. But the world just, you know, the whole game of you made me, and the whole that accountability model that I hear you talking about, it sounds like its foundation is what I call the three magic killer words for relationship. You made me. And the minute that I say those words to somebody, I just set up for the end of that relationship, for the destruction of that relationship. And if that isn't reversed, then chances are it's going to be pretty tough to build anything that has any really truly holy meaning, any truly loving meaning. It's going to, I would say, tend to disappear in that situation. So, interesting. Well, let's check with Michelle and see if we've got anything happening in the chat room or anybody with a hand up in the phone queue. Michelle?
Hi there. Well, a couple things. There's somebody with a hand up right now, but Michael, it was interesting because I've never seen this person in the chat room before, but Camille's there. And I didn't know if there was anything that needed to be shared or just to have her get in touch with you.
Oh, well, actually, I had sent her a text this morning, and at least in the only phone number that I have, asking her to send her address to me. So I'd like to get her address if you've got that. I'm not sure where you are these days, Camille, but if you get that to me, I would appreciate it. I have a little package I'd like to send you. So I'm delighted that you're there.
Is that just so ironic?
Interesting.
So,
small world. She didn't get my text this morning. I may not have a correct phone number for her. Actually, I tried to call her, and the number that I had was disconnected, and I sent an email to the address that I had. She didn't get that. That's interesting. But she's there. How cool is that?
She's here. Isn't that nice? So we have
the light
code 901 on. Who's calling, please?
Hi there. This is Brenda in Memphis.
Hey, young lady. Brenda. Welcome.
I just had a small comment because I have a very short time. I can listen, okay, but I don't have time. I don't have the opportunity to talk. I was at my
meeting
yesterday, and the teller that I usually go to, young man, and when I left, I said, "Have you seen the movie Inside Out?" Now, I have not seen it yet. I haven't made it to it yet. But I've been listening to the conversations. And so I asked him if he had seen it. He goes, "Oh, I went to see it this weekend with my friend." And I said, "Well, what did you think about it?" He goes, "It was awesome. It was awesome." And I said, "Well, if you like what you heard from there, then why don't you go to yagen.org because you'll find more information on it." So he said he would do that. So that's a way of, you know, if we hear people ask people if they've seen it and if they really enjoyed it, then I thought, oh, what a nice way of them sending them to the website. So that's my comment.
Cool. Awesome. Well, it is. It's interesting. The two most recent movies. One of them being Tomorrowland, which unfortunately I understand Disney is way in the hole with, and I would love to support anybody seeing Tomorrowland that would like to support movies that are based in light coming out into the world. And so it was unfortunately a pretty poor showing. Although it was just, again, a powerful declaration for me. And then I was reading some of the reports on the opening weekend for Inside Out, and apparently it's one of the, I may be mistaken, but I think it is the strongest showing for an original movie. And when they say original movie, I guess that means something that isn't a sequel, but it's the strongest showing of any movie that's ever come out, the Inside Out film. So it is making an impact and I think growing strong. So it's pretty awesome to see that. And, you know, I've said it before, I think it is one of the most important events in the history of humanity that this film is out there. And people say, well, now, come on now, how could a silly cartoon be the most, one of the most important events in history? Well, for me, the thing that has me see the importance of it is that it is an honest inquiry, perhaps the first one that I've ever seen in the public eye, into how the human mind operates, gives us a demonstration of the healing process and how the mind operates in a way that a small child can understand it, and it's globally available. And to me, that is monumental. And is going to open up such a space of healing on the planet that it is unprecedented.
The thought that came to me when you were saying that is Yeshua spoke in parables because
yes,
it would go into the conscious mind. And so I think what you're saying is that this is what this movie is doing. It you can be looked at as a parable blocking the mind. Also, one other thing, I was on listening to that this morning, and there were two incidences or exposés on two people in the Middle East, one in the Middle East, I think one in Africa or something, that are working with this idea of the, and they didn't say an Aramaic forgiveness, but the way they were talking about it, it, you know, resonated with me. So if anybody wants to go on to the outlet, bbcoutlet.com, they might be able to find it.
I didn't quite understand. Where did you say this was occurring?
Well, I don't remember because I was rushing out of the house when it was on, but it's somebody in the Middle East. Remember, I had sent you a link to the young man in Iran, I think it was, who was working with the death row people. And this was another similar. It wasn't the same story, but it was kind of a similar. And I was thinking this morning that I thought, the shift is coming. The shift is actually happening and beginning to accelerate, even in the midst of what appears to be blocked. And that is good. But anyway, that's my comment. So I'm going to sign off, and I'll keep listening.
Okay. If you could, Brenda, just repeat once again, where was this information, how was it conveyed to you? Where can somebody access it?
All right. I listen in on the library channel. They broadcast the BBC Outlook program. And the Outlook program focuses more on the success stories of people in the world, whereas the state BBC news that follows it is about current events. And you can go on the bbc.com or .org website. I had sent you the link to that first one, And each day you can listen to the story that they do for
okay,
that
so
one.
Okay, so BBC episode. Outlook.
Right, it's the BBC Outlook.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you, and you have a blessed day. Give that grandbaby of yours a hug for me.
Will do. Will do.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Lots of love.
Bye-bye.
Okay, take
bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye. So our call-in number is 646-200-4169. We would love to hear from you and your thoughts, your process, your experience, and how can we support you. Are there any questions we can answer for you on how to engage this first century Aramaic process of forgiveness? And if you weren't with us on Monday and Tuesday and you've seen the film Inside Out, or if you haven't seen it yet, we spent 2 days, Monday and Tuesday, talking about all, or at least probably not all of yet. I'm sure it'll come up some more, but
within the film.
We lost you, Michael. You are not audible. Michelle, are you
excuse
there?
Excuse me, I lost my connection. I lost my connection there for a minute. So I was just sharing and inviting people to go to the archives for Monday and Tuesday's show to hear the conversation on the movie Inside Out, and all of the nuances are there, and what some very creative people are doing to engage that film and tie it into using it, especially with children, but certainly as effectively used with adults when one recognizes how this process of healing really works. Powerful, powerful couple of days.
I'd like to read a question from the chat room for you, Michael.
Please, yes.
So the person wrote, doing worksheets with a friend, she confided that she had been raped as a child. I replied that was over my head, and any support I could give her would have to be for less traumatic triggers. The person's wondering, what would Michael suggest? And I had asked a clarifying question in terms of, is she looking for suggestions for her friend to heal that trauma, or suggestions on how she could support her process? So I think both angles will be good maybe to cover.
Certainly, certainly. And sadly, that type of assault, you know, when I spoke about coming into the world as the presence of love and thumbprints being put upon us, that's one of the thumbprints that is more commonly placed on people than we would like to imagine in this culture. Huge, huge, huge numbers of both males and females have that, the experience of being assaulted in that way, which is just beyond bizarre and insane. Although working with that kind of an experience is no different in essence with the forgiveness process than any other trauma. The number one key to all healing is that if we hold an energy in us that is less than love, if we can begin to access the layers of that energy and hold to the space of active love, then when those thumbprint energies are brought to the surface in the presence of love, they're going to begin to dissolve. And so that's the essence of the process. And in my experience, we're not going to have more of that energy surface than we're able to handle. And so I would offer that that yes, you can be the space for that, and that the individual involved, there are probably some very, very deep levels of trauma that are going to have to ultimately surface, but they're not going to surface right out of the chute. It's going to take time to open the space. And And as one becomes stronger and stronger in the use of the tools, they're going to be able to access deeper and deeper layers of whatever it is that they need to work through. And so the first thing would be the commitment to be the space. So you might go to the website, and on the website you'll see a link that says worksheets to print. One of the things that's in that link is the commitment from the Healing Through Relationships workshop. I'd suggest that you print off both copies of that, the copy that is used for me in relationship to you, and the copy that I would use for me when I look in the mirror. And I would suggest that you hand this lady a copy of the one to use with herself in the mirror, and that you start to read it to herself in the mirror, and that you read that commitment to her, that you're there to hold the space and allow whatever needs to be worked through to work through. And our definition of working through it, it's not some kind of big intellectual process that takes a super skilled person to do. Our definition of working through it is, can I hold a space of love for what's going to surface for you? Now, let's say if I'm the person who's going to be the support here, if I've been sexually traumatized, then as this person I'm working with has their trauma surface, I may tend to get drawn into their process through what their process resonates in me, and I may find myself losing the capacity to be the space of love. And that's when then it turns back to my work. And as I do my work around, as I do the forgiveness process, as I live the commitment with myself in the mirror, then I peel off the layers of trauma, of anger, of hate, of fear, of grief, of rage, of sadness, and pain. I peel off those layers in myself that are resonated by what this person is going through. And as I peel those layers off, I heal. And as I heal, I'm more empowered to hold the space of healing for this person who's been through such an event. And so any energy that is less than love heals the same way as any other. The smallest infraction is healed by the same principle as the deepest assault is healed. That is, you bring the energy out of hiding that's painful, you breathe, and you hold a space of love for it as it surfaces. You know, Dr. Tim started out talking about this accountability tool in therapy, and, you know, I'm supposed to keep track of you so that I know that I can trust you, which, of course, if I have to keep track of you to trust you means I don't trust you at all. And so if I'm going to be restored to trust, then I'm going to clear out the layers of pain, of fear, of sadness, of grief, of rage over being betrayed. And as I do that, then I'm going to be strengthened as the active presence of love in my own life. And when I am strengthened in that, then I become more and more empowered to heal, to hold the space of healing. The beauty of the process is that if there is at least one person in the space who functions as active love, then that person becomes the light in which the darkness of pain dissolves. It's not about figuring it out. It's not some big complex, I need to figure out how to fix you or fix me or fix this. The key, and, you know, I've been doing this work for a little better than 45 years now, and when I look back at all the times when monumental healing occurred, you know, I'd ask Dr. Tim his input. If he looks back over the years where he's seen those huge changes that happen in people's lives that would seem to be impossible, I guarantee they didn't happen out of someone figuring it out. They happened out of someone holding and being the space of love when that which was less than love surfaced. And to me, that's the skill that each of us wants to develop in order to be empowered to bring that process of healing to another's life. Tim, do you have any thoughts in that regard? And you know, if you think back over your years of practice when you saw those kind of huge, huge changes take place, would that principle be the operative principle?
Yes, absolutely. And I could say I'm complete because what you said is right on target with what I would say. And years ago, back in 1995, I stumbled across a theoretical perspective for therapy, which is called at the time depth-oriented brief therapy. And now it's called coherence therapy. And the essence of that work is that it refuses to think of people as damaged or broken or sick in any way. And it assumes that from their study of therapy sessions where this dramatic change has happened that you're talking about, deep healing has taken place within a session or two or three. And they analyze these sessions, these brilliant minds, Bruce Ecker and Laurel Hulley. And what they found was that deep shift took place when people were assisted at looking at, in their unconscious process, what it was that made it important for them to create and hold on to the pain or the symptom that they were asking help to get rid of. And all that's done in that work is ushering them into that awareness and then staying there with them in that awareness, holding the space, as it were. Now, in that work, they didn't use the word love, but its essence is the same thing. It's completely accepting. It's the absence of judgment and labeling as damaged or broken, and it's helping the person understand the energies and the dynamics within them that make it seem like it's a good thing for them to do to hold on to or create this pain. And in that just being with that awareness, things start to move. And then the next level of it is to help that person shift back and forth between their awareness of themselves in this pain with all these negative judgments and their own inner knowing that they are something better than that, that they have more skills, that they are lovable, that et cetera. And then these two knowings are within the same person. Even a person who's had a trauma of rape in their past, when it gets triggered and they have all of this emotional response and trauma come up, at different times, a day or two or a week or two later, they have a joyful time in their life. They have a deep connected time with somebody in their life. They've got a relief time in their life. So they have a part of them that knows that whatever happened in the past to their body didn't damage the core of who they were. And the truth of this, if I can sit with, hold the space, and help somebody move into the awareness of that within themselves, that's what promotes the healing. Because their true nature is love, and my ability to tap into that aspect of myself, as you just said, that creates this atmosphere in which the healing occurs. The integration of all those truths occurs.
Powerful. And I think that, you know, for me, that was one of the things that they so powerfully captured in the film Inside Out, that, you know, in the opening scene, we're introduced to this newborn child, and we look inside of her head, and there's joy, this being surrounded with light and living as love. And she, you know, goes through all sorts of things and gets lost in long-term memory, and you know, parts of herself, her anger, her fear, et cetera, you know, want to run the show, run the control panel that controls the child Riley's behavior. And when she's lost in the depths of it, her light still shines, her light's still there, even though she's in the sadness or she's in the feelings that are going on. And so very powerfully portrayed, and such an honest inquiry into the mind and how healing occurs. It's just amazing. So if you haven't seen Inside Out yet, get your tickets today. Go see it. It will really impact you. It's very, very powerful. So you want to check with the person in the chat room and see if that opens a space for them, or if there are any other nuances or refinements we can offer them? In the meantime, are there any other comments there in the chat room, or is there anybody with a hand up?
Yeah, she had wrote that, thanks for reminding me the importance, in all caps, of holding the space up for love as the various feelings arise from my friends. I do understand your explanation and feel much more capable of working with her. I guess I was overshadowed by her confidence and forgot the value of functioning as holding space for light to heal and alter the pain. Thank you very, very much.
And let me just throw in another thought that ties into that. You know, I can remember as a kid being told, there'll come a time when your whole life will become a prayer. And I'd been taught that praying was being down on your hands and knees, putting your order into the cosmic gift catalog, telling God what God should be doing. And, you know, for me, that one just meant square knees. Where do you go with that? Why would I want my whole life to become that? But when you realize in the Aramaic, and this is what we're talking about that brings healing, in the Aramaic, the word prayer, and when you're told to pray ceaselessly, like for eternity, pray, that doesn't mean, God, you should do this, God, you should do that, God, you should do this, you better do this, you better do that, you better do that, you better do that, you better do that, which, you know, most of the world thinks of as prayer. But rather in Aramaic, the word means to set a trap for God, which sounds a little strange to our culture's ears. But when you realize via a parable that, for instance, your TV antenna, if you want to watch Channel 2, your TV antenna is a trap for Channel 2. If you've got no antenna attached to your television set, you can sit and look at Channel 2 forever. There's not going to be any signal there. But when you hook it up to an antenna that is shaped and aligned properly, then that antenna traps or captures the signal for Channel 2, feeds it into the television set, and there you have a clean picture and clear sound. You've got a proper trap for Channel 2. You and I are energetically designed. Our physiology, if it is aligned properly, is energetically structured to capture, just like the television antenna does, literally, the energy of love in which we live, move, and have our being, and to bring that actively present into the world. That's what we are designed for. And so when it says pray without ceasing, what it's saying is maintain your alignment with love so that you are continuously, literally, and this is who we are. When we maintain our alignment with love and we bring that love into the world, then we are that space and we shine that light. And as we do that, and we're not talking about perceptual light. You know, one of the things that Dale Allen Hoffman talked about in the first hour of Aramaicisms, a new video that we'll have coming out, is that he talks about the difference between the masculine and the feminine in Aramaic. And we see many languages that, you know, the English language isn't like that, but where words are gendered. And so in Aramaic, a masculine word means something that is manifest or expressed in this level of energy that we call physical. So if I look at the light bulb that's radiating light, I would be looking at light in its masculine form. But then there's the feminine, which is different than that masculine, physically expressed form, And, you know, when Yeshua says, I am and you are the light of the world, he's speaking about the feminine gendered form of light. And that is that there is a light that the eye doesn't see, but the being perceives and is able to experience and express. And that's the feminine aspect. So it's not physical looking at the physical light coming off of the light bulb, or so-called physical light, or what the physical eye can see, but rather is that higher energy. When we ask the question, you know, how many have ever held a newborn child? What one does is one goes into the experience. You know, generally speaking, people, when you ask them to tap into the essence of the newborn and their first experience of holding a newborn, they don't go into their heads and think their way through something, but rather they go to the experience of the light that the child is. And that's the feminine. That's the femininely expressed. And so, in the same way, prayer would be the expression of that light. Living in that space and having it actively flow through us 24/7, 365. When we do that, our whole life has become a prayer. And in the presence of prayer, in the presence of that feminine light, healing happens. It dissolves. It's like, you know, they say water's the universal solvent. Well, this light that we are is the truly universal solvent, and especially that dissolves the trauma that and the thumbprints that have been put upon us by a world that is trapped in insanity. And so to be here to heal the insanity becomes the key. And what I can't hold to that light, what I can't stay in the Aramaic sense in the presence of prayer for, is my next piece of work. So if I look at an event or I hear about an event and I go into trauma, I've lost the capacity to hold to that energy of light and love. And that means that I now am confronted with my next piece of work. If I can't hold to the light, if my structure tightens and I go, well, what about when you did? Then I've lost my living in prayer, living as a human being, bringing forward that feminine, which means the non-visible aspect of light that people experience as comfort, as sweetness, and as healing. And each of us is designed to live there. I think that the reason why the average male in our society dies 10 years earlier than the female is because that light in the male is extinguished very, very early by messages that say, be a tough guy, don't show pain, don't show fear, you've got to show them. And you just tap into, imagine yourself saying those words that I just said and notice what happens. Things tighten in you, things lock in you. And that shifts the flow of energy. And that shift of the flow of energy inhibits the flow of that light into and through us. And people who don't have that light flowing into and through them die faster and more painful deaths than anyone else could possibly think of. So that would be my support in that arena, and thank you, Dr. Tim, for your input there. That's powerful to see that being comprehended in the therapeutic community, and just, you know, being brought to, coming from more and more places and being delivered to more and more people, that understanding, that comprehension. I was actually watching a film last night about some of the insanity that's gone on in the Middle East between Israel and Palestine, and they were interviewing some of the the Israeli equivalent of the CIA, and how these people just got into committing atrocities, and you know, just in the context of this conversation we're just having, basically you watch these men who are the tough guys who ordered, you know, deaths, who ordered, well, atrocities, and each one of them lamenting over what they'd done, and you could just see them as they realized that they lost their light, and lamenting that, and the pain and the grief of that, but they had to be tough and, you know, protect and all of those sorts of things. And you know, if we could just get the understanding to move into the culture that we are designed to be the light of the world, and if each of us would turn that light on. But what happens is when I meet a brother who's done something that I consider offensive to me, I turn my light off. When I turn my light off, I go into pain, and then I make up stories and pictures about how I'm in pain because of what my brother did, instead of I'm in pain because of what I'm doing to myself. And if we could get each of these brothers to meet, you know, you look at the people on both sides of the fence, quite literally the fence between Gaza and Israel, they're cousins, they're brothers, and they've individually and collectively lost their light until they, in their rage and blaming someone else for the loss of their light, destroy themselves and each other. It's just such a bizarre and insane thing to have happen. And so the restoration of understanding is what our work is about. Any other thoughts before we check and see if Michelle's got anything else? Dr. Tim?
Well, just the idea that when if I'm with somebody and they start working on something and I get triggered to upset, there is nothing that I know that's more powerful than me admitting my upset and doing my own worksheet in front of them or with them and demonstrating to them the power of the process rather than me trying to be strong and pretend this isn't upsetting to hear. Rather than trying to tough it out, one of the most powerful things that I do, and it happens occasionally even in sessions where I begin crying, you know, not sobbing, wailing, but tears stream down when I'm tapped into something, and I just keep the session going, and I stop and take my breath, and I identify for them what's going on in me and own it as mine, show them how I would work through it with breath work or canceling a goal. There's nothing I know that's more powerful than that.
Hey, it occurs to me, Tim, as you're speaking of that, you know, back, oh, I don't know, it's probably 2 years ago now, you introduced a story from the book The Gentle Art of Blessing about a gentleman in the concentration camps. Maybe you'd share that, because I think that's just such a powerful example that you brought to us of that gentleman in the concentration camps. Would you share that? Yes. Go ahead, Michelle.
Well, I was going to suggest, I want to hear that story, but we've also have a couple hands up who've been waiting, and we've got time to get to them, so I don't know if could just...
Okay, well, let's hold that one and go to our callers so that we can get our callers in. Let's go for it.
Thank you. Area code 618, you're on the air.
618, welcome to the show. Give us a name. Where are you calling from? 618, are you with us? Hello, area code 618. You're on. Okay, they must have turned away from their phone for a minute. Michelle, you want to tap that other caller in?
Yeah, someone down from your neck of the woods there, Michael. Area code 417.
Hey, it's Farmer Jim here in Heartland.
Hey there, James. Welcome, sir.
I have...
You artist, you? Jim has become an artiste. He's working on a whiteboard presentation, computer whiteboard that will be part of what we'll be doing our social media with. And so that's kind of cool. And so what's on your mind, Jim?
Well, just after I finished 4 worksheets on frustration and 3 more on patience, that's what it takes to learn this program. 2 things. I wanted to acknowledge Susan Darnell for her willingness to our spokesperson, as it were, in a video that's going to be done that will hopefully really encourage people to come and attend Laws of Living workshop, which will start in July. It's 16 days, and Susan has done with Laws of Living like nobody else has done with it, and I hope you're on the phone.
Yes.
She is just starting or about to start her fourth Laws of Living class, and what's really cool is that she has just immersed herself in it, and she's just so good at it and so loving and caring and has had such great results. And in addition to that, she's created a really nice additional income source for herself. So that's a good thing. The other point I wanted to make was when Dr. Tim was talking, it triggered the thought about, Michael, you've talked about, and I don't know if there's enough time left, but talked about what's the payoff or what's the benefit that people get from non-human behavior that kind of puts fuel on the fire, as it were, in a negative way that, you know, they're raised, whatever the non-human behavior is, that there's a payoff for them. So if you could address that briefly, I'd appreciate it.
Sure, I think we can do that. And as you're speaking about Suzanne, it's just amazing. She came 2 years in a row to do the Laws of Living Intensive, which is going to be, at this stage, it's the only actual intensive that we've confirmed that we're going to be doing. It'll start on July the 24th and go through August the 8th. And, you know, she's picked it up. She did it 2 years in a row and then started teaching it. And she's just been going from one class to another. And so she's on her fourth, getting her fourth Laws of Living class organized. So that's pretty awesome. I think the main payoff, Jim, that people get from going into non-human behavior, hostility and fear, is that they get to anesthetize themselves against their pain. So someone who's just in that raw space of pain, if they tap into hostility and rage toward whoever it is that they're currently blaming for their pain, the payoff is that, well, I'm raging at you for what you've done, I can feel powerful, and the rage creates a literal chemical addiction that keeps me from feeling my pain. I believe that rage is probably the most commonly used drug on planet Earth. It is an internal chemical created that acts as an anesthetic against pain. And it is addictive. If people are rage addicts, hostility addicts, I suggest they start a 12-step program and go through the whole 12-step process to undo the anesthetic effect of the drug and to get back to where they can directly feel their sadness, their grief, their hate, their fear. And as they are able to directly feel that and develop the skill of staying aware at the same time, to hold to conscious, active, present love, then in that space of conscious, active, present love, they begin the dissolution of their pain. Certainly a much better solution than anesthetizing their pain. So great question. Thank you for that one. And we are down to the last minute or so, so I'll just put out the invitation. If you're ready to come and join us for Food, Fun, Forgiveness, and Work, we'll be doing, it's kind of an economy program. It'll start on the 11th of July. We'll be doing work projects during the day, and in the evening we'll do workshops, and on Saturday we'll be doing Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. And then it'll be followed by Laws of Living. We're here in the Ozarks in southern Missouri. If you want to come and join us, get on the phone and give me a call. My phone number is 954, and I ask you to just use it for that type of communication. Otherwise, our availability, an hour a day on the radio show, is what we choose to do for public conversation, and, you know, doing one-on-one work with people over the phone during the radio show. But my phone number, if you want to connect with me on and ask some questions about that or get registered for one of those workshops, is 954-205-4996. 954-205-4996. 205-4996. We appreciate you being with us. It's been a fast hour. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.